So what's that?
It's Marshall Cairns. And what has he...
He's organized since the civil rights times. You know, he was an undergrad at Harvard, and he ended up going to South Mississippi and got involved in the, you know, civil rights in the 60s, and he was in all the fights in Mississippi and Alabama and all of those. And once the civil rights bill passed, he moved to California to work for a very iconic man, Cesar Chavez, or the Mexican American community. Cesar Chavez is like the Malcolm X and the Martin Luther King of the Latin American community. Yeah. Yeah. And so he went and worked with him for 16 years and did all kinds of movements and strikes and for the United Farmers. You know, at the time, farmers, you know, they were basically being killed by pesticides and no health care, nothing, you know, no. I mean, you can imagine the rest, and poor housing. They lived in, you know, in abandoned junk cars in the field and on the floor or whatever, you know, chicken coops, things like that. So he organized with Cesar Chavez for 16 years, came back and organized for, you know, all the unions and whatnot after they successfully passed all these laws in the 70s and 80s, and then moved back to the Cambridge area, finished his degree because he interrupted his degree, then did a PhD in sociology, and became a professor at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And he's written books and basically perfected the notion of the power of organizing.
Yeah.
So through the personal narrative. So he has two specific classes and then one specialty in coaching, but leaders. But the idea is to learn how to empower people. And so he has two main areas that he teaches. One is he designates as the story of self, the story of us, and the story of now. And so he has a whole curriculum on that. The idea is that one individual, anyone, in order to become activated, it needs to be able to tell the story, his or her personal story, and how that is a story that is repeated in a group of folks, and then they'd be able to identify that and connect with that at a deep emotional, cultural way, you know?
Yeah.
And then from that, it creates the power of us, you know, and then of course the part of that process is to identify why do we need to act now, what is so important, it has to happen now. And so you've got to answer the question of now, why now?
Yeah.
And so there's a very tight curriculum about that, and all these exercises and workshops that come with it, and evolving from there, there's a coaching stuff that is actually done for people that are already professionals in the world of organizing or running organizations. And so that's a whole other process of coaching folks to become sort of like enablers of others.
Yeah.
And then finally, there's an actual organizing class, which is called Community Organizing, People, Power, Change. And that's the whole mechanics and of how to organize campaigns and how to identify the issues, how to run, you know, from A to Z, the whole enchilada of how to actually organize. And so people come from all over the world to take his lectures.
Yeah.
He's a mentor, and so once I graduated from him, he was one of my advisors when I designed the campaign for, and that was successful here in Boston. And so he
the casino?
What?
The casino one?
Yeah. He was one of my main mentors. They had three mentors, Richard Parker, Macho Gans, and David Carrasco. It was like my three mentors, and out of all of the things that I learned from him and from them, I was able to pour into this design that I did successfully here in Boston. But so he loved it so much that he was so happy with it that, you know, he regards me as one of those, like, this is what I'm talking about, from the bottom up, with no money, with no, just people investing themselves into a process of empowerment. And so he was really happy with me, so he gave me all his lectures on a
USB?
Yes, I have all his, everything that he teaches I have in paper, and
is that for sharing?
Technically, legally, I'm not. He told me, like, this is for you, but, you know, I can show you, but I cannot give it to you.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, you know, stuck on that. But you can find some of his lectures online. So it's not.
I took classes with him too. He's incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. There is a guy locally here that I might have his DVD. You could have it if you have that capability. He's written a book called How to Start a Revolution.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been translated into, like, a million different.
The hero of it. Very highly regarded in the Arabic world. can read.
What about, did you ever do anything on, what do you call them, in Chicago? The whole Industrial Areas Foundation stuff and all evolved from it, what do you call them?
Cleaning up sites?
His name escapes me at the minute.
Super.
Are you
talking about the main organizer, like the
Rules for Radicals?
I have the books here. That's
Saul Alinsky. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we studied him, you know, and this is part of why the Reich hates Marshall Gantz.
Yeah.
Because he basically they accuse him of being too radical.
Yeah.
Like this guy.
Yeah.
I studied all of them, and I studied all of that, but and I understand the limits of what Marshall teaches. His limits are his religion. He doesn't know, and he doesn't really care about religion.
Yeah.
I mean, he understands the power of religion, but
Gantz
like
or Alinsky?
Both.
Yeah.
Both, because they're very socially minded. I mean, they think of people as a source of power. Meaning, like, collective.
But that Alinsky model is all about organizing
religious
institutions.
But it's radical in the sense that they will go at people's houses and do very, even violence, you know?
Yeah.
And harassment and things like that. Which I think that tension has a place, for sure, in my mind. But I think more and more so, Marshall Gantz moves from there towards a very intense involvement at a granular level of connections between humans.
Yeah.
So the idea is in some grand scheme.
Yeah, relationship.
It's all about the personal connection, the one-on-one mentality, you know, meeting one-to-one and developing affinities and overseeing how people complement each other's connections and talents and skills. And how that idea of the snowball model, you know, the snowflakes model, which is basically all these differences we make us stronger, sort of thing. And so, and so without necessarily, you know, going to violence, but basically with the idea that hope is more sustainable in terms of campaigning than resentment or hate.
Yeah.
So he has this whole thing about, you know, you get the stuff and that motivates you, that's fine, but you know, as soon as something happens or doesn't happen, you are likely to give up and become even more cynical. Whereas if you just have this hopeful thing that people just love to come back to that because it reveals them to be together working on things that matter to them in a very local level but also overlaps with larger goals with others, then you have a more sustainable model of being organized.
Yeah.
So it has the whole, you know, so there's all of that. So I don't think he would walk away from the importance of the more radical practices, but he would use it as a tool, not as a frame of work, not as a fundamental.
And does he frame his concept of organizing in any of the like classic isms?
Union organizing, you mean, like more like militant?
No, in terms of like anarchism, capitalism, socialism, communism, all of that. Does he frame his thinking in terms of organizing? Has to be ideologically framed in any of that stuff, or is it ubiquitous and applicable anywhere?
He moves away from that.
Yeah.
And it becomes more of a it sort of leaves it up to whatever the situation is. But what he's looking for is empowerment by building capacity ultimately. The idea is that you gotta build capacity, whether that is for the purposes of socialism or capitalism or, you know, communism,
yeah,
or whatever reason, it's up to the organizers. You have to be able to sell your concept.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's concerned or he's trying to push an agenda or one particular ism over another. He is definitely in the idea that you have to stand up for yourself. And if you think collectively that the best way forward is through socialism, then that's the way you want to go. And he's not trying to change your mind, you know.
Yeah.
But hopefully you also learn that if that particular ism didn't work out or doesn't really, that you might be able to retweak that and rethink your own practice or ideas to make it more adaptable so that you can be successful in organizing.
Yeah.
But I'm not really, I never seen him push a particular ism. What he does care, which is I think both a very powerful notion and also his downfall, is that he wants people, secular people, not religious groups, you know, not institutions to have that power.
Yeah.
He wants to see the power coming from underneath. This is what he wrote a book called Why David Sometimes Wins.
You know, David Sometimes Wins?
You know that whole idea of
David Goliath? Yeah.
You know, basically, so he's basically coming from the farmers' world of organizing, and there, you know, then prior to that, the you know, civil rights movement, he's very aware of how, like, underrepresented underdogs, how it's very hard for them to organize and build capacity.
Yeah.
To even understand what the actual depths of the issue that they're facing is and how that plays out. And it's very, in that way, it's very similar, although it doesn't really mention it ever. But I happen to be aware of this because of my radical Catholic upbringing.
Yeah.
He's really in tune with the theology of liberation for South America.
Yeah.
In particular, the educational system of Paulo Freire. It's very similar to that, in that, you know, we sort of like, you have these people realizing how powerful they are.
Yeah.
And how without them, these other folks on top cannot really oppress them.
Yeah.
And so they have to find those sweet spots where they cannot really, you know, what do we have they need, whether it's labor, whether it's votes, whether it's time, whether it's skills, you know? And then you find those as point pressures with, you know, in a given frame.
Yeah.
And then you have to be very strategic, and this is when the counseling becomes really great, about helping you think strategically and tactically. And a lot of people that are organizing don't really, they're reactive. They like, they're pissed off.
Yeah.
They're motivated, or they're dreamers. They have these big isms, ideas.
Yeah.
But they're not worth for shit in terms of practical, pragmatic moves to how to get a message across.
Yeah.
And so out of 100 bottles, there will be one or two. And what I see, because I'm very well familiar with those groups, and there's a lot of reaction. There are a lot of reacting and very little thinking, but also that you make those powerful structures react to you.
Yeah.
That's what I like to do. That's why I don't do it very often.
Yeah.
Because then you want to have some surprise, you know, some. And another thing that another mistake that people usually make when they study martial guns is that they take him as if he was the one way to do it. And I don't. I think he's great, amazing. Like, more likely you would use it in many, many different levels. He tells you himself, like, this is just a frame of understanding. In order to really get to this, you need to practice this organizing, and you really need to think deep. A year with him working is not really going to help you much, you know, unless you understand deeply all the tools of organizing, the limits of these tools, and when to properly use them for what purpose. And so what happens is that the organizing becomes repetitive in what their expectation is, and becomes, they basically take the original idea of one-on-ones, the original idea of really deep connections, and they standardize it in such a way that it almost becomes monotonous and repetitive and no longer really as effective, you know? It's like too much of the same. Like, it's like the virus has a commutation, and you lose it when you use it to all the time. It's no longer a powerful tool. So you see what I'm saying? Like,
no, yeah.
And so it becomes predictable by your opponents. They expect that, so they now counter that. There's a way to counter that, and so things like that, that I don't think folks see so many steps ahead of them, you know. And I think that he doesn't teach you that. He doesn't teach you to think strategically long term, like a military mind would, you know?
Yeah.
And I therefore think that, you know, there's gotta be, so if you go to the Catholic Church and you study the Jesuits, you will understand what thinking strategically long term means. You know,
yeah.
These guys know how to be in a long game, you know, in the long haul. They have this principle called he who endures wins.
Yeah.
You see? So in the Catholics, they are now, like, you know, almost two millennia of experience in, you know, enduring and persistence, sometimes very high, sometimes like the gutter, but it's always steady, you know?
Yeah.
There's all these things that they know how to adapt, and there's a long-term planning and thinking and methodologies that I think escaped a lot of the organizing class, the activist class. This is why I say that, you know, I have tremendous respect for the activists, and I think it's a very important part of our democracy. But I always get, you know, I get really exasperated by some of them sometimes.
Yeah.
So I don't, that's why I don't know, you don't see me in their daily activities and all the time, because it's, you know, at some point it becomes like too repetitive and not enough of strategic thinking, you know. And they're wonderful people and all that, and they're really doing their best and so forth, and I think it's respectable and amazing, but at the same time, I think there's a fundamental problem that I don't see them really addressing, you know. And I just don't have the energy or the interest to go and try to, like, show them any.
What do you think about, so, like, I've seen two forms of activism in America, two forms of, there are a million forms, but.
Well, there were a lot of forms.
But what you tend to see are big mobilizations on a fairly regular basis. So the anti-war or the Occupy or now the Black Lives Matter movement for Black Lives, things like that that seem to be, in a way, mobilizations.
Yeah.
But whether they have a strategic outcome, like if Occupy ever achieved anything, I don't know.
No.
Black Lives Matter achieved anything, what change did they create? And then you have the, like when I was in New York, I was looking across a couple of IAF organizations, Industrial Areas Foundation. So they operate on the Alinsky model.
Uh-huh.
And they were in Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Jersey City, various different stages of growth. One institution was 30 years old, another was 2 years old. And I got a bit of an insight into how they were building through faith-based institutions on self-interest, basically, to push for things like housing, employment, parks, education, police resources, stuff like that. So that model was like a localized version with a template of accessing people through their institutions and then activating them on their interests, housing, etc., and holding power to account or drawing down funds by building a different power outside of the democratic or republican structures in the given communities. So that it was interesting to look at it like that way, right? And then also to see that in East New York they built something like 5,000 houses. Now I don't know whether those houses are, they call them affordable. I don't know whether they're true. You know, I've heard the stuff about what is affordable and what isn't affordable. And,
yeah,
what's that?
I didn't say affordable for who.
Yeah, I know, exactly, and who gets them and who
falls. Something I actually like about in Boston, when the people that work on affordable housing, they say, we're not interested in affordable housing. We're interested in making sure that poor people have housing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because they're here, like, we're talking about poor people that make less than X amount of dollars.
Yeah.
That's what they're, so they're talking poor people housing, but not affordable, because affordable is relative, you know. So
yeah.
I don't know much about the developments in New York City. What I can tell you is that there's different models that are very effective. For example, one group that is not mentioned in the list that that Lupin forgave you, and it's not an accident, is that he didn't mention, let me tell you something. I think Lupin is the best organizer in the state, as far as I'm concerned, by far. Like, I'm planning to go and actually work in a few things with him because I have this deep admiration for him, and I think he's the best organizer we have in the state. In me, like, this is me, the smartest, the most kind, and very strategic, and so forth. There was another organization that he used to lead years and years ago, and at the time, they were going in a different direction. So they're friendly and all that, but they're not really. Best buddies or anything, but it's called Greater Boston Interfaith Organization, GBIO.
Yeah.
And they're about, I think, 17 years old or something like that. But they have about 120 congregations.
Yeah, they're IAF, aren't they?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
And in a way, they're sort of like a similar model, but also and a little bit of a competition with MCAN. Not too much, but a little bit. I think MCAN is more of a statewide thing. Boston, UBIO is very local to Boston, so I personally don't see them as either or, but sometimes working with them can be finicky. I think you should meet with the person of UBIO.
Yeah.
A friend of mine is at you know, he teaches at Harvard Divinity School.
How can I do that?
Well, I just call him up. And
he's only here till Thursday, though, so it's like today's a snowstorm.
Well, I can give him a call.
Yeah.
And they can give you sort of a sense of that. Again, and they organized it. The chief organizer for them, another one that is like martial arts level of understanding. He is a pragmatic, mean, sort of like effective community organizer that knows what the hell he's doing.
Who's this?
His name is Larry Gordon.
I met him. Is he gray beard?
Yeah.
That
is a false version way. That guy is the guy who really brought back GBIO to life. He's the chief strategic organizer.
Yeah.
And the president of the GBIO is sort of like the good cop is Reverend Burns Steinfeld.
Yeah.
And Burns, a super nice guy, very likable. But these guys can bring you the governor, the mayor, all the prophets into one church packet with 2,000 people, all leaders from this, and say we want you to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And they're not gonna say no to GBIO. They're really, really serious in terms of their organizing, you know?
Yeah, I've heard some stories. I met him briefly the first time I was here, and the way in which I met him, he was supervising the organizer in Jersey City, who was getting started, and the way the interaction between the two of them. So I'm sitting here like an observer, watching them two interact after a faith leaders meeting, which Frank was controlling or organizing, and then Larry was observing and putting him in the direction of this and that and the other. And so it was fascinating to watch that, but that was all I got with him. He actually said to me, I should come to Boston and get a chat with him, but I never got the opportunity. You know.
Oh, he by far is the most cunning and astute and clever and experienced. I think so. It makes him very effective. You know, I think Lucifer is a lot more sensitive and smarter, but I think he's also he's more sort of like respectful and timid and gentleman, you know, they're very, very Larry's like it's all business. So boom, 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 like, you know, like a general, you know?
Yeah.
Or a sergeant or something, I don't know, but so he has that he trains, constantly training the members of GBIO, and there's all this training on houses and the committees on what different policies. They have a system of how to get consensus of what the agenda is on a lot complicated group of churches, you know, that they have this way of doing things, and so it's very organized. So they asked me to, you know, wanted me to work for them, I couldn't really accept for my various reasons, but I have a lot of, we have a very good relationship and all of that, and I think we want, I don't know his availability, but definitely should at least get to know Reverend Steinfeld and be in touch, you know, but you already know a little bit of Larry, so. But the mechanics of it is very straightforward. It's just, they have a MO, a modus operandi, you know.
Yeah.
They have a format and they stick to it in a very significant way.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I've seen it operational and effective at 30 years old and 2 years old, and I think there's something really impressive in it.
Yeah.
Also, like, they're East Coast and West Coast, although there's a big, I think there's a division in the camp. East Coast and West Coast.
Oh, yeah.
But my real passion
this whole thing was the was started by a Jesuit.
Yeah.
And so the way they think and what they do, the affiliation is a Jesuit. This is where the school of thought where I was chased as a boy and so forth is, I didn't know that until I later, you know, saw what they stand for. And I also, this is exactly how it's sort of like how I operate myself, you know. I don't do it in I don't have an office or a salary or anything, so I don't do operate like that. But when I do organize, I definitely organize in a very similar fashion, you know. And I didn't know that we share a very similar curriculum and frame, you know.
Yeah.
So when I met them, it was really sort of like a natural connection. You know? It was really easy to see how they work and why. I think in my experience, that technique, the ruthless technique of Larry Goldman, they could be easily improved with the touch of someone like Lou Fencer. And so I feel like I take from those two myself. So I think then vice versa. You know, Lou can really benefit from that ruthlessness. But I'm really different people, you know. So I think a new version of how best to go forward is that sort of a mix, you know. In any case, so I can see if I can. I don't know if he's available or not, but I can try to give him a call and see if you can meet at least Reverend. Are you interested in Reverend Fields?
If there was anybody you think I would meet, anyone if they were up for it, definitely to get a deeper understanding of that IAF sort of evolution and how it replicates. On, you know, they're organized in Berlin and England and all sorts of places now.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
They have the international.
They're operating internationally, yeah.
I know that Marshall Gans, they all have a similar Marshall Gans sort of a thing, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very connected, and it's no coincidence with the Jewish mindset of Marshall Gans and Larry Gordon, the Jewish, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they have that same, because the sense of empowerment comes from some rabbinical teachings that they have as young men.
Yeah.
And so this is where they got it from, so to speak, you know? So when you get to know them more, like, deeply, you know? They have these commitments and they're both very similar, Larry Gordon and Marshall Gans. They could be family members, you know? That's just how they operate, you know? How they think. Yeah, so who you should talk to or meet, you know, I'm let me see. Yeah, somebody from GBIO would be nice. Who else? Because you're looking at something more like established, right? Because I know a lot of ministers that are like in that world, but they
want
to refer you back to
the EBI. I also like to get to talk. I've enjoyed getting to talk to organizers, but also the organized, you know, like their perspective. Because often organizers see the whole picture and can see a lot of progress. And often the organized, if they're depending on what degree of organized, can't see much of the picture at all. Or
like half making it and half forgetting about it, so there you go. Cheers, guys.
Thank you. What is this?
It's a hot toddy.
Hot toddy.
A little bit of whiskey, a little bit of tea, honey, ginger.